listening. And I must apologize not only for not speaking French, but I also have developed a cold and I have a very scratchy voice. So luckily most of you will be listening to a translator instead of me. So Chicago, Towards Zero Carbon, the Central Area Decarbonization Plan, started as a project 3 years ago in 2009 in our office. It was a downturn in the economy. We had a lot of staff available, and we'd always wanted to do a lot of research, but we'd been very busy. And then suddenly, we weren't so busy. So we were able to take on this project for the city of Chicago. It was a pro bono project. We had been working, the city of Chicago was working on its climate action plan and the goals for that. There was also the 2030 American Institute of Architects 2030 commitment going on. There was a lot of goals with regard to reducing carbon in cities. And so at the time, we were working on the Sears Tower. We were looking at greening the Sears Tower, which is about 4.5 million square feet, one of the largest buildings in Chicago. And with that client, we felt we could reduce the energy usage in that building by about 80%. So through a series of different sustainable strategies. And so the city approached us and said, well, if you could do that for one building in the city, could you take that those strategies and those lessons learned and move that across all of the buildings in the central business area, which is about 550 buildings? So that's what we started to do, was look at how could we reduce the carbon in the whole central area based on things we had learned from working on the Sears Tower, or the Willis Tower. So from the Willis Tower, the Sears Tower became the Willis Tower a couple of years ago. We were, the only way to reduce the energy in that the building, was not, our office is famous for building new zero energy, high performance buildings. But you can't just, the loop is already built. The Chicago Business District is already built. We can't destroy the building and start fresh because the embodied carbon in the building will never be reclaimed by putting a new zero energy building on the site. So we felt, we knew the carbon for the entire city was per year is 39 million metric tons of CO2 emissions, and the loop being would be 10% of those emissions, 3.9 million metric tons, but it's only 1% of the area, but it's 10% of the emissions. So if we could reduce the emissions in the loop, we'd get a good chunk of the emissions, and it's 1% of the area because of the density, because of all the tall buildings. So we felt there was more to it than just looking at the buildings, that we really could achieve higher energy savings and thus carbon savings by looking at a series of different areas, not just buildings, but urban matrix, which speaks to density, waste, infrastructure, water, mobility, community engagement, energy, and funding. And the synergistic relationships between those areas would result in higher carbon savings and better quality of life as well, which was also a very important thing from the architecture and urbanism side of things. So I'm going to focus on just a couple of areas, buildings and mobility, and a little bit on community. This is a study that I've been working on for 3 years, so I could talk about it for 2 or 3 hours easily, so 10 minutes will be tough. So, we looked at all of the buildings in the loop, and 90% of the buildings were built before 1975, and that meant that all of their equipment was, at least 30 years old and all coming up to be replaced. So we felt that this was the time to start looking at the existing buildings replacement. This is a video of a parametric model we created that ties together data about each of the buildings. We did a fairly exhaustive research on each of the buildings in the loop, and it ties together the data with a 3D model. And you can see the bars on the right are moving to change the parameters. We could change the glazing from single glazing to double glazing. We can change film on the glass. And you can see that the carbon numbers at the top, as we adjust those parameters, the carbon number changes up or down. And so we could do this on a building-by-building basis, or we could look at the whole city. What if we change the entire city to double glazing or insulated it further. So this is a model that's in a pilot at the moment. We're looking to develop it further and possibly look at residential in other areas of the city also. So the model also allowed us to divide the buildings out by era. So we had the sort of the heritage buildings, the older buildings in Chicago, 100 years or more, the mid-century buildings, the post-energy crisis buildings, and the energy-conscious sort of lead, USGBC lead, 2,000-plus buildings. So we could sort out where what eras the buildings were in using that model. And then urban matrix really refers to density. We looked at the city, and it really doesn't have a lot of residential in the downtown. It's only 10% residential. This is the city as it stands right now from our model. It's 10% residential. It's 90% commercial, which means most people are commuting back and forth. And to me, that represented the fact that there was a lot of carbon being used going back and forth. Yet we have a lot of these older buildings that showed up here that are sitting empty because they don't make good office space. Their ceilings are too low. They don't have infrastructure required for cabling for modern-day office situations. So could we look at converting those to residential and thus bring more people into the downtown core? So this series looks at what if currently 10% residential, what if we bumped it up to 25% residential, and we started to include other amenities. You know, so there's very few schools in the downtown core. There's very few daycare centers, very few medical facilities, other amenities, green spaces, other amenities that people need to live. You can see that some of the buildings start to change too. We start to add green roofs, living spaces to the tops of some buildings. The Sears Tower right here, you can see we changed the top of that to residential and we added some green roofs onto it. And as we go up to 40% residential, you can see we add more living spaces, green roof living spaces on the tops of buildings and convert more buildings to multi-use. And we went as far as 50%, and of course adding amenities as we went along. So this is a good example of one of those buildings. This is the old Colony building. It's over 100 years old in the Loop, but it's sitting at 40% vacancy. So we looked at, could we convert those spaces into living spaces instead? You know, currently there's the occasional odd doctor and lawyer's offices in there, but the building's in, it's a beautiful building, but it's in quite bad disrepair. But it makes great residential space. You know, it was built 100 years ago, so it was built using passive ventilation or meant for passive ventilation. So there's operable windows along the side. It's a very narrow building, so you can get daylight back into this, all of the spaces. So it makes great sense to turn that into a residential building. And you can see utilizing the roof deck as well to create green space, outdoor amenities for the residents. And as I mentioned, with those amenities, you also need to include, or with those little neighborhoods, this is a plan of Chicago. We thought, let's look at creating these smaller neighborhoods and ensuring that they have schools and daycare, places to grocery shop, green space we don't currently have in the Loop. And this is another idea of one of the existing buildings, creating a space where you can work, you can live, and then your children are going to school up at the top level as well. So it's fully integrated into the Loop. Mobility. We mapped all of the different mobility systems in the Loop. We looked at the train lines, the bus lines, the elevated train lines, the bike routes, and we mapped, and also all of the underground pedway system, which is a system that's very poorly utilized at the moment, but it's very well utilized in cities like Montreal, Toronto, Minneapolis. And our system is a little sketchy, and it's shown by the little pink pieces, our basements and little walkways, but you can see they're all disconnected. So we have very similar weather in Chicago to Montreal and Toronto, very hot in the summer, very cold in the winter. Could we up that pedway system amenity? This is actually a better diagram of that. But you can see this arrow going right across the middle, and there seemed to be no connector across the Loop from east to west, from the train stations in the west to across the business district to the park in the east. And so we looked at creating this intermodal green space that crosses across the city above grade and below grade. It moves people from the train stations, from the suburbs, across the city, and connects right across at an underground level. This is a street that's currently about four lanes, one-way traffic, and we narrowed that down to two lanes and created a green space alongside of it. Yet below grade, we have this intermodal bus line that would take people below grade and keep that above grade level as an amenity. But with lots, you can see there's lots of openings and cuts into it, so it's not completely submerged. And the space would become a 24/7 activity space. Currently, it's the Loop, it's the business district, and during the day, it's busy, and then at night, it's quiet. And so this space would become like this during the day and like this at night because you have more people living in the Loop by densifying the Loop. The community engagement aspect is something that's really important to me. We found that we could reduce carbon by by engaging the community. You could reduce the carbon further by anywhere from 3 to 15%. And that was very interesting to me as an architect because we're used to looking at buildings and making buildings more efficient, but actually the engagement of the community has a huge effect also. So we looked at a series of different strategies. This is the Wacker Manual was a book that came out based on the Burnham Plan, which was the Burnham Plan for the city of Chicago, which was actually based on Haussmann's plan from a long time ago. And so it's about 100 years old, but they created a manual that explained to everybody in the city, all school children, I think they were grade 5, 12-year-olds, they all received this Wacker Manual and they so that they understood urban design. And the whole idea was to bring back the city, give back the city the lake from Industrial Revolution. So we thought, well, what if there was a textbook now that was called the Green City Textbook? And it was a textbook that talked about the sustainable era and how we could take back the city in a sustainable way. We also looked at, we currently have a green roof in Chicago on the City Hall. That's the lower right photo. We thought, what if that became more of an urban agriculture? That we actually created food and we sold it in the market down below, and that became another community engagement, a way of educating the community about sustainable practices. So again, the project became...
1 minute.
Thank you. The project became such an overwhelming project. You know, it really started out of how can we make the buildings in the Loop more energy efficient, but it became this really, really huge project. It actually became a book, and I have the book with me. It's a 300-page book the study developed into, with over 100 different pilot projects in it. Right now, we're looking to try and move forward with some elements, such as the buildings, looking at retrofitting commercial buildings in the Loop. But there are all of these other elements tie into it, and funding is a particularly tricky one when we're in a city that is broke. So we're moving slowly forward. The community engagement, you know, I've been teaching at IIT. We have an exhibit at the Chicago Architecture Foundation on the decarbonization plan. So we're slowly taking little chunks out, but it's a project that will take a long time. Thank you.